Well, I'm just telling you right now, Dan Galante back at the studios in Los Angeles, rack up that first break because we'll be going to it as quickly as possible. That's because we only have an hour with Stan Lee, and I'm going to make the most of every second that we have. I'll curtail my opening comments here to just a couple of quick pieces of some housekeeping and then right to Stan Lee. I'll also warn you. At the bottom of the hour, we'll give the phone numbers. We don't know how many people will get on with him. If you get on, consider it a privilege and don't waste the opportunity. You never know when you're going to get that again. A reminder from Lex. Tonight is the kickoff of our free StreamLink weekend. You can find more on that at coasttocoastam.com. Go there to the webpage, find out how you can download 8 free shows and try out the numerous exciting features of StreamLink, which include classic shows, live broadcast, Coast Writers Forum, audio clips, and the newest edition, Podcast with iTunes. One of those podcasts you can download is one of the most popular Coast to Coast live programs. Certainly, it's the show that has generated the most email. Perhaps you haven't heard it because you get Coast to Coast AM, but your local market doesn't carry Coast to Coast Live, the early show on Saturday nights. So this would be your chance to hear the show, which we call Jason the Horse, the man who believes he has the soul of a horse. And it was just one of those shows which a lot of people thought was just going to be total nonsense. Their BS detectors were going off before they even heard a word of it. But then they actually heard the program. And they wrote with great volume. Take a listen if you can. It's amongst the many programs you can download for free on the free StreamLink weekend this weekend at coasttocoastam.com. And I also have to say congratulations to K-Man. He writes under the pen name of Kyron. His real name is Michael, and he writes on banalofamerica.com. He's a fan of sci-fi and a horror fan, but most of all, he loves Coast to Coast. He's fond of both Coast to Coast AM and Coast to Coast Live, and we just wanted to congratulate him on 2 years on writing his column, The K-Files, on Banal of America. Thanks for all the kind words and for the great years that are ahead for both you and Tim. And then finally, Stan Lee helped to create the comic book world as we know it. He made superheroes in his image and likeness, but he has never rested. Stan the Man for 1 hour, rare and exclusive, next on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie. Thanks, George. This is Ian Punnett. Stan Lee of Marvel Comics, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to be talked to, but I'm sorry I missed the show about the guy with the horse, with the soul of a horse.
You would have loved it, I'm
Oh,
telling you.
man.
I will say that
That's a tough act to follow.
we've never met, but you've been a friend of mine for years, and I know that you hear that from so many fans out there. There are many more famous hosts who could be interviewing you tonight, but nobody with a greater appreciation for your work
Well, bless
than
your
I
heart.
have. I mean that. And I've loved reading about you over the years. I was telling one of your people who had called earlier in the week, and I just said, I've just always been more fascinated with you almost more than your creations. And I've read stuff about you over the years. I'd love to put it to the test. You got a second?
Sure.
All right, Stan Lieber. Is that correct?
That's
Your
right.
birth name?
Stanley Lieber. Stanley Martin Lieber.
Now, you wanted to save using Lieber for the day in which you might write something that was of greater import than a comic book. Did you ever?
No, I'm afraid not. See, on the day that I started writing comics, nobody had any use for them. Nobody had any respect for them, and I hated using my real name.
So you kept holding on to it, thinking one of these days I'm going to use it, and Stan Lee, of course, kind of, grew from that, and you became the franchise in a lot of ways for Marvel Comics. It's probably appropriate for me to mention some of the most famous, although I can't get to all of them. We all know Spider-Man and the X-Men, Fantastic Four, Daredevil, you were involved with, of
Oh,
course.
sure.
That's one of my favorites, and I even liked the movie Daredevil. Not everybody did, but I was really hoping for Daredevil 2. I thought it was
There will
great.
be one.
Will there be
Oh,
one?
yeah, there'll be one.
Okay. And who else should we mention of the ones you're proudest?
Hulk, Daredevil,
oh, Hulk,
Doctor
of course.
Strange, Iron Man, Thor, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Silver Surfer. And we can go on and on.
Well, and Silver Surfer is another one, too. There's so many of these, which I think, you know, Hulk was, I enjoyed the Hulk movie, but not all of the comic books have translated as well to the big screen as some of them have. And everybody knows how successful the Spider-Man series has been. What's the secret from a great comic book becoming a great movie? You've been involved with both.
Well, I think you have to absolutely capture the flavor of the comic book. And it's not just comic books. When they make a movie of a novel or of a stage play or anything, the most important thing is to figure out what made the original source so popular. What was it that made that something that the fans latched onto and not lose that quality? Sometimes you make a movie out of a book, but you don't include the one element that made the book successful. And it isn't easy always to tell what that element is. That's the tough part.
What have been the most successful translations of your Marvel comic series into film? In your
estimation? Obviously, I think Spider-Man and the X-Men are the two most successful.
Right. But, I mean, successful, too, is an artistic project, not just as a financial one. I mean, are there other ones that didn't do as well at the box office, but you thought it did capture the spirit of the original comic book?
Well, I thought that Daredevil carried the spirit, captured the spirit.
I
thought
too.
The Hulk did. The only thing about the Hulk, personally, I thought there was a little too much concentration on that business with his father. And I felt it should have been a little bit lighter than that.
Right. I could so see that. Nice artwork, though. I've always loved the art direction on the Hulk.
Oh,
I thought
yeah.
that part was really cool. I really liked how they did that.
Did you know that the Hulk was originally gray in the origin story years ago?
I did not know that. Why was he gray?
Well, you know, I learned that fans, for some reason I've never figured out, fans of superheroes, they love costumes. When I did the Fantastic Four in the first issue, I didn't give them costumes. And we started getting fan mail, and the fan mail read, "We love the book. It's great. We can't wait till the next issue. But if you don't give them costumes, we'll never buy another copy." So with the Hulk, here I was going to do a story about a monster, and I couldn't think of any reason why a monster would buy a costume for himself. So I figured I'll give him a different color skin. That's the next best thing. And I thought gray would be kind of spooky and scary, but what happened was the printer couldn't print it well. In some pages, he looked like he was dark gray. In some pages, it was light gray. In some pages, it was almost black. So being a comic book editor, you're a little bit like God. You can change anything. So I said, in the next issue, I'll give him a different color. And I looked around, and nobody seemed to be using green for a character. So I said, I'll make him green. And it was just as simple as that.
Well, and I think that's fascinating, too, that you were getting a sort of the interactive input from your fans. Things that people were writing to you in the formative years of those characters, like you mentioned with the costumes, but in other aspects of the character that you incorporated that originally came in just a letter in the mail?
Well, I got so much mail. And more than mail, I did a tremendous amount of lecturing at colleges and universities, and we'd always have questions and answers period. And I learned so much more from the people in the audience than they could ever learn from me. And it's so great. You talk to people who read your books, who care about the books, and they tell you what they like and dislike. So my job was easy. I didn't even do the work. The fans really did it for me.
Well, you know that I preach a little on the side, and every once in a while someone will come up and they'll say something that they heard in the sermon, which I know I didn't say or I didn't think I said, mm-hmm. but they heard it in there and they thank me for it later. And I go, well, that's really cool. Next time I'll do that on purpose. I mean, there are things like that that people catch that you may not have even known that you were putting in there. But
you
obviously
are so right. Now, take the X-Men. I was just originally trying to get an interesting group of characters with interesting powers, and I thought it would make it twice as interesting if the public really didn't like them that much. And if they had a worry about their reception by the outside world, little by little, I began getting mail saying how great it is that I'm doing these stories about bigotry and the evils of bigotry and so forth, and race hatred. And I guess I was doing that, but I was doing it subconsciously. That wasn't the main purpose.
And when the X-Men enjoyed its reincarnation on film, there was a lot of talk about how this was really a story of homophobia.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And that was not wasn't part of the original blueprint.
No, it was the furthest thing from my mind.
Right. and so I love those characters. And of course, my kids are big time into them. And I have one son, Itchy, who's read all 8 volumes of the Essential X-Men. I think there are 8 now. They're each
there
on a phone.
There is greatness in that young man.
Yeah. they're each like the size of a small city phone book. And he's read 8 of them. And he can't wait for more. And what he's fascinated with, and what I love about the stories, is how it relates to both the pain of being who you are, as well as the great joy of realizing who you are. And these characters, I think, speak to that kind of adolescent angst.
You're absolutely right. Well, you know, the thing is, every writer who writes anything tries to make the characters as believable as possible and as empathetic as possible. You want the reader to understand the character and care about the character. And in order to do that, you've got to give the character weaknesses. You've got to give the character problems. You've got to show the things that worry the character and torture the character, as well as all of the great things about him. Then you get a real 100% of a person.
So what worried you, and what were you angst-ridden over when you were a teenager that showed up in the comics later?
Well, I think mainly the thing I was worried about was just security. My parents were living in the time of the Depression, and my father was mostly unemployed, and our biggest problem was paying the rent in our little apartment every month. So that was the thing uppermost in my mind. And when I wrote Spider-Man, I guess I wasn't consciously thinking of it, but it must have been in my subconscious, because I made Peter Parker a young man whose aunt never had enough money, and he was always concerned about making enough money for her so that she wouldn't lose the mortgage in her home and have to be kicked out of it.
You know, I saw this thing on you, or on the history of comic book heroes on the History Channel, which was way cool. Mm-hmm. And I loved the part about how Jewish theology worked its way into some of these superheroes from the very beginning. And I just especially when they were talking about some of the Superman stuff and some of the words that from Krypton were essentially taken directly from Hebrew. And I was like hitting myself going, that is so cool. I don't know why I never made that connection. And I think that's like a whole nother aspect of the comic book experience that we don't even really think about, which is that everybody is sort of shaped by their birth home and how their family of origin treats them growing up, and how that ends up getting worked out in the comic book characters. And I found a lot of things that you said in particular during that History Channel piece to be fascinating.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was not aware that there were any Jewish words or similar to Jewish words in the Superman stories. I've got to go back and reread them.
Well, you didn't catch that part. The name, any word that, well, I don't get into it with you, but you go back and see it. And it's interesting, like Kal-El, and all of the way that the names from Krypton end in L comes directly from Hebrew. You get Daniel.
I wasn't even aware of that.
I thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It knocked me out. But so as you look at, as you look at the progression of these comic book characters, and I know that you've worked obviously in a couple, not just for Marvel, but you did some consulting for DC too over the years.
Well, not quite consulting, but a few years ago, we decided just for fun that I would do a few books for them. And I took their characters like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, the Green Lantern, the Flash, and I wrote different versions of them as though, how would they be if I had created them? And it was just a fun exercise.
What the Green Lantern has always been one of those characters that always, it kind of almost always made it. But
I'm sorry,
never,
which one?
The Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of was always on the cusp of becoming, I mean, it's legendary, no doubt, but I don't think, I mean, I know they're coming out with some movie on it or something, but I understand it, but I mean, it's just, it seems like he never quite got the traction that the other characters did from that era.
No, I guess not.
Why some characters catch on in that way and others just kind of not?
Well, it's the same, you know, you could say the same about books, you could say the same about movies, and usually it is simply a case of you have to make characters, I think I mentioned earlier, that the reader or the viewer cares about and is interested in. One of the best examples to me was Sherlock Holmes. I mean, I was so interested in Sherlock Holmes when I was a kid, reading those stories, even if I didn't care who the villain was, even if I didn't care who was the murderer or the robber or whatever, if he wasn't a detective, I would still have enjoyed reading the stories because I found his own personality so truly fascinating. And to me, that's the secret. Now, maybe with the Green Lantern, and I'm not familiar with him, really. I don't even remember his name, his normal name. So whatever it was, maybe the readers weren't that interested in him as a person.
And yet, you've had such success with the ones you've had. Are there characters you created that I don't know about because they just didn't catch on, that you thought were going to be a hit and it just kind of didn't?
I hate to say this because it's going to sound terrible, but I really didn't have any that didn't become hits.
No, there are no Green Lanterns in your past, in the sense of,
not that I can think, not since the Fantastic Four, when we started the so-called new Marvel Age. You know, we had called our books by a different name. I think we were Atlas Publishing before then. And after the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, Daredevil and the others, and we saw that we were on to something because the readers loved them, I decided to change the name of the whole line of comics, and we changed it to Marvel Comics. And I must say, every book that we published of a superhero or heroine under the name Marvel Comics, they've all been very well received, and they'll all be movies sooner or later.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess I thought there'd be like one, you know, there'd be like the Blue Bonnet or somebody that never quite caught on or something. But
no, not yet, but give us time.
I don't believe that. I'm sure you won't do that. But I'm sort of intrigued too by the idea of about how the characters have developed and how they've reflected the changes in our cultures. What do you see? And I mean, now that, you know, comic books, as you said at the beginning, were kind of something you were too embarrassed to put your real name on.
Right.
And now it's, you know, mainstream, huge, big, you know, business for all aspects of the entertainment industry and part of our national psyche. What's the future of comic book superheroes or comic books in general?
Well, I think that they'll stay about where they are. You know, years ago, there was no competition at all, except perhaps for movies and the radio. But now you've got television, computers, video games, iPods. I mean, there is so much to occupy people now that comic books are just one of many forms of entertainment. But they are a popular form. They're comparatively inexpensive. They're fun to collect. And they don't take up that much room. You could collect hundreds of them and keep them in a closet. They're fun to share with your friends. So I think they'll always be around. And the big thing is, people are so interested in movie producers and TV producers keep scanning the comic books looking for ideas for movies and TV shows. So they'll always be comics just because they form a basis for things in other fields, in other media.
And let me rephrase that a little bit. Part of what I was getting at there is, what's the future of comic book superheroes? How will they change as the culture changes? Well, that's my fault for not being clear enough. I mean, how do you think that will change?
I don't know. I've never thought about that. You know, usually a writer is affected by whatever the trends are at the moment. For instance, when we were writing Captain America years ago, it was the time of the Nazis, and all of our villains were Nazis, and we had mostly war stories. Later on, we were worried about atomic energy and the atom bomb. And a lot of our stories had to do with radiation and atomic destruction and so forth. And now there are different things. I think we'll have a lot of villains now who are terrorists. And whatever is happening in the world is reflected in comics, and I might add, also in movies and television.
We'll leave it there for the moment. We'll come back. We're going to give everybody the phone numbers. We'll get to a few lucky people who'll have a chance to talk with Stan Lee of Marvel Comics coming up on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. And we have the honor of talking with Stan Lee, both about the past and the future. We were just talking about the future of comic book characters, how they might change. Before I go back to that, let me just say, Stan, I looked it up. There's a great book you might take a look at. It's called Up, Up, and Oy Vey, and it's written by Rabbi Weinstein, and it's a book all about Jewish themes in superheroes.
Oh, that is funny.
And he talks a lot about Peter Parker being Jewish, too.
He's Jewish, too?
That's what he says. I wasn't aware of that. I'm just telling you what he said.
I never thought of him as Jewish. That's funny.
Yeah,
you never know what it is you're writing.
But as you were talking about the future of comic book characters, and you were talking about the comic book villains, and that they might be, you know, terrorists, it leads me to wonder about, I mean, how are we going to handle Islam in comic books? Has anybody gone down that road and how they're talking about radical Islam extremists, or has there ever been a Muslim superhero?
No, not that I know of. Maybe in Arabia there has been, maybe amongst the Arabs, but
even
doing the villains, you know, I would rather call them terrorists than call them Muslims.
Well, I would get that.
I wouldn't pinpoint any particular religion or race.
Well, I get that, but when they were Nazis, they were Germans.
Yeah, but right? We called them Nazis.
Yeah, instead, got to stay away from the.
There were some good Germans.
Of course, of course. I guess I wonder, like, I mean, is a lot of things get sort of nuanced in comic books and sort of maybe fleshed out there in the battle of good versus evil, how the comic book world will handle that, both with terrorist Muslim extremists and also somehow a Muslim superhero somewhere down the road to balance that out, too.
And there well may be. But again, I cannot stress enough that comic books are in their own way so much like movies and television, because they all follow the same pattern and they all go down the same road. They all have the same type of heroes, the same type of stories, same type of villains, and it's just that they're different mediums and the stories are presented differently, but the overall pattern is pretty similar.
We're lining up some callers who want to talk with Stan Lee. We'll get to that, plus his current projects. And a question I was sort of wondering all day long is, what is Stan Lee's favorite movie cameo of the many you have done? We'll come back. We'll find out on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Making the most with our 1 hour with Stan Lee on Coast to Coast AM. And all right, so of the many movie cameos you've done, and I get a kick out of, you know, spotting you like Alfred Hitchcock in those Hitchcock movies, which one has been your favorite?
Actually, the two that you haven't seen yet.
Oh, really?
I have one in the next Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man 3.
Right.
Where I actually speak to Peter Parker.
How about that?
And I'm not going to tell you what it is. It's a very dramatic bit. Then I have one in the next Fantastic Four, FF2, which is, I predict you'll say, it is the funniest thing you've ever seen.
Well, but wait, weren't you the mailman in the last one,
That's
right?
That's right, I was Willie Lumpkin.
Didn't you speak to the characters then, too, as you walked in as Willie Lumpkin? I'm trying to remember. Did you have a line?
Yeah.
Didn't you have
I was supposed to say, the Fantastic Four are coming back. They've been somewhere. They're coming back to their headquarters. And I go over to Reed Richards, and I say, welcome back, Mr. Richards, or Dr. Richards.
Right.
But I wanted to make my line longer. And you know that they do a lot of different takes. So right. On the second take, I said, welcome back, Dr. Richards. We sure missed you. And on the third take, welcome back, Dr. Richards. We sure missed you. You're looking great. And on each take, I said more. Everybody was hysterical. And then he started answering me. He'd say, gee, Lumpy, you're looking well. How have you been? And we ended up having a long conversation, which, of course, was cut out of the movie. But it was the most fun we've had in a long time.
Now, wait, so you're not coming back as Willie Lumpkin in Fantastic Four 2?
Nope, this is a whole new one, and it's 100 times funnier. I can't tell you, but don't dare miss it. By the way, speaking of the Marvel movies, there's one thing I got to mention. You introduced me as Stan Lee of Marvel, and I love that, and I still am the Chairman Emeritus, which, as you know, is kind of an empty title. But I've also started my own company called POW Entertainment. So I'm now competing with things that I did years ago, and that's a lot of fun.
And you've got a new movie coming out. You have a couple of features that you've put out with this new company.
Well, we have some DVD. The first things that are coming out, we have a DVD. It's an animated DVD, movie length, called Mosaic, about a teenage superheroine, and it's voiced by Anna Paquin, who's a wonderful little actress. And she's a real superhero. I don't want to say too much about it, but we're very proud of it. And that's out now. And next month, I have a new superhero called The Condor, and he's a Hispanic superhero, because I felt it's time we have a good one. And he's voiced by Wilmer Valderrama. Well, I can't wait till you see that one.
I would love to see that. Well, tell me about the difference when you're doing a female super heroine as opposed to a superhero. I mean, obviously there have been many over the years, so it's nothing new, but do you approach the character differently when you're writing from a female voice, or are superheroes superheroes superheroes?
Oh, no, but it doesn't have to be a superhero. It could be any character. If you're writing a female, you just write her differently than a male. Females, for the most part, speak differently. They react differently. And anybody who's over the age of 12, I guess, knows the difference and has been with females and knows. So you can't write them the same. Our heroine in Mosaic is a gal who wants to be an actress. I don't know of any superheroines who've wanted to be actresses before. So it gives an added dimension to the story, and I think it makes it rather interesting.
What are her talents as Mosaic?
Well, she had a pet chameleon, and she gains the power to be able to she's a shapeshifter. She can change her shape, and the fact that she's a good actress enables her also to change her voice, so she can impersonate almost anybody. And she also can, as a chameleon can, she can stick to walls, and she has some extra strength. So she's there's a lot she can do, but she's also vulnerable in many ways. And she's a real gal, and she's more interested in being an actress than in being a superheroine.
What does Condor do?
Condor is a skateboard champion,
cool.
He has an accident, and he hurts his leg. And he gets himself a very special skateboard that enables him to do things no one else can do. And it's a very dramatic story. His parents, he's a little bit embarrassed by them because they speak with something of a Spanish accent, you know. And he learns, as the story goes on, what a fool he had been. And he takes pride in his heritage. And obviously there are some interesting villains and a lot. And there's a gorgeous girl who's a villainess, and he doesn't know she's a villainess. And I shouldn't be telling you this, so I won't.
but it sounds like a silver sidewalk surfer in a way.
The way he is on that little skateboard of his is very much like that. But for a change of pace, we also have one that stars Ringo Starr.
Oh, I heard about this, but I don't know anything about it.
It's animated also. It's a full-length feature one. We're just finishing the script now. That won't be out for a while. But I said to Ringo the other day, I said, you know, I'm going to make you famous. And he was so appreciative.
Let me ask you about the immigrant story idea, because that sounds like it goes back to the roots of a lot of the super comic book heroes that seem to be telling the American story of somebody who came from another planet or came from another country, and they're assimilating. And so much of what Superman was about assimilation. And some of these other characters pre-war, post-war, was all about becoming an American and standing up for America. And I always thought that was really sort of an intriguing idea for people who's who may have been the first generation Americans that were now the comic book drawers, kind of like what you're talking about with Condor.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of truth in what you say. Although I must admit, I think when Siegel and Shuster were making up Superman, their biggest thought was, we got to get some character that people are going to buy, and they'll like him, and we'll be able to get paid, and we'll pay the rent this month. I don't think that the whole socialistic thing was that. Because I know in my case, you know, you mentioned earlier that people read a lot of things into something.
Right.
And that's really the way it is, because so much has been read into a lot of stories I've written that I know I wasn't thinking of on a conscious level when I wrote them. Now, you never know how your subconscious is working, of course.
But when you're working in simple elements, in a way, it kind of has a way of distilling out a lot of other things. And they get down, if you're writing a story with simple elements, you're going to pull out the simplest elements within you. And so that may be just the simple thing of your family of origin, what kind of thing, how you were shaped by your parents, or the, you know, the how your soul was tattooed at birth by
I think every writer, in fact every human being, is a product of his past environment, of his upbringing, his parents. In fact, you're affected by everything you have read and seen and heard all of your life, when you were young, certainly. So we carry all of those memories with us and all of those impressions with us wherever we go and whatever we do.
Did you used to hang with the Superman guys? I mean, did you ever socialize with the
Not
the
as
DC
much
Red?
As you would think. I was friendly. I got to know Jerry Siegel. After a while, but I gave him a job at Marvel. There was a time when he really needed work, and I gave him a job at Marvel for a while. Unfortunately, he had to leave after about a year because his wife was ill and had to go out to California. Marvel was in New York.
Right.
So that was it. I never met Joe Shuster, but I was friendly with Carmine Infantino, who for a while had been the top man at DC. He had the job that was the equivalent to mine, and even though for the readers, we pretended to have a great feud between the two companies. But we used to meet a couple times a week or a month at a place called Friar Tuck's, a little bar in New York. And we'd have drinks, and we'd bring our artists with us or our writers. And we were all pretty friendly. We were all in the same business, all trying to do the same thing. And we all respected each other's work.
What about Bob Kane?
He was a very good friend of mine. In fact, I'm so sorry. We lost Bob a few years ago. And as you know, Batman came out way before Spider-Man. And he used to rib me and say, well, Stan, you saw what a big success Batman is. Where is Spider-Man? And now that Spider-Man is a big hit, I can't tell him about it. He must know about it, though.
I sure hope so. Let's get a couple of callers under the time we have left for Stan Lee. It's Johnny in Atlanta, first-time caller line on Coast to Coast AM. Johnny, you're talking with Stan Lee.
Hiya, Johnny.
Hey, Ian. Hey, Stan. It's a great pleasure to be talking to both of you guys.
Thank you.
Stan, I have a couple of questions for you. One, I guess, is a comment. I love the Spider-Man movies, and I really hope that you guys make another Spider-Man and you give Bruce Campbell the chance to be the mega villain, because he did give Spider-Man his name in the cage match, and he was the snooty usher in the last Spider-Man.
I'm a big fan of Bruce Campbell's. I don't really have anything to do with the casting, but I'll certainly mention this to the guys when I see him.
You may not have anything to do with the casting, but you know people listen to you. So if you can just...
They'd better,
know,
I shout proud.
Johnny, go ahead.
Okay, I had one other question. I have a question about what's going on with feedback from Who Wants to Be a Superhero on Sci-Fi Channel. And I'm homosexual. Who do you think may be gay out of all the superheroes? I'll hang up and listen off the air.
That's a great question.
I got to tell you, I really... Oh, wait a minute. I had a hero who was gay. He wasn't a prominent one. Did you ever read Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos?
No, I didn't. I don't know that one at all.
Oh, well, years ago, I got tired of doing superheroes at one point, so I did some World War II stories, and I had a platoon headed by Sergeant Fury, and in the platoon, there were a lot of different types. They were all ethnic types. There was an Italian, a Jewish guy, a black guy, and there was somebody named Percy Pinkerton. He was an Englishman who carried an umbrella. That was his big weapon, and I suspect he was gay.
You suspect that. Actually, I heard that Green Lantern, in one of the incarnations, and like I said, I read about comic books more than I read them, and I thought that somebody had been doing that with the most recent incarnation of the character.
See, I wouldn't know, because that's the DC company, I'm not with them, and I'm sorry. It's always possible.
Yeah, wildcard line, Ray, a trucker, on Coast to Coast AM for Stan Lee. Ray, go ahead.
Hello, Ian. Hello, Stanley.
Hiya, Ray.
I grew up with comic books like the Hulk and everything, but one of the ones that I really got a kick out of was the She-Hulk series. I really loved that series because she knew she was in a comic book, and some of the things that that allowed you to do with the stories were just hilarious.
I'm so glad you said that. I thought that was clever. I loved it myself.
Yeah, I really liked her way she'd step between pages when she was in a hurry.
That's very funny. I wish I'd seen that.
Are you planning on doing any more series like that where the characters actually know they're a comic book character?
Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to see Joe Quesada, the editor-in-chief in New York, in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to mention it to him. And I don't know. He's the guy who makes those decisions. I don't know what his plans are. But if he hasn't thought of it, I'm going to just put a little idea in his head.
Well, and thank you, Ray, and I appreciate that. Where will people be able to get your new products?
Oh, in any store where they sell DVDs.
Okay.
It's called Stan Lee Presents. That's the main title. Of course, I wouldn't leave that out. And then it'll say Mosaic, and next month it'll say Condor, and at the end of the year it'll say Ringo, and it'll never stop.
That's very cool. And do you, I mean, I know that the Marvel method was this sort of organizational system where you were sort of the top of the pyramid and you had other people that were working with you. When you go back, and you were always, as I understood it from what I've read about you over the years, you've always been very deferential to the artists that actually did the drawings of these or some of the other work that you did may not have done the hands-on work on. Do you wish, if you could go back, that you could do more of the hands-on work itself? Or are you happy with the Marvel method?
Oh, no, I think I did quite enough, thanks. But I'm glad you mentioned the artists, because I have to say that they were collaborators and they were really co-creators. For example, I might have come up with the idea for the Hulk, but it took Jack Kirby to draw him and bring him to life and make him look the way he did so that people would want to see more of him. And it took Steve Ditko to draw Spider-Man the way he did in those wonderful drawings of his. And also, these artists, the ones I worked with, were very good at story. And when you mentioned the Marvel method before, I thought you were going to mention the method of writing the stories, because we reached a point where I was too busy to write them all. So what I would do, I would just come up with the idea, the main idea for the story, and tell it to the artist. And he would draw it any way he wanted to, in whatever way he thought was best. Bring me the drawings, and I would then put in the dialogue and the captions. Right. So it was a true collaboration. And these guys were so great that they probably drew the panels better than I could have described them to them.
And yet, did any of those characters that you helped create or created entirely on your own over the years, were any of those representatives of your own family? Did you ever put any of your own people in your series?
Not consciously, no. I never really. I never put anybody, any friends or family or anybody.
Weren't you tempted?
Just try to think of who would be an interesting character. If I had a guy who was a doctor, a guy who was a lawyer, and what would make him interesting? Well, maybe he had this quality or that quality, but I never consciously said, gee, I'm going to make somebody like Uncle Sam or like Cousin Mary, or no,
or,
I didn't
or
do
take
that.
or take a attempted to make a supervillain out of your mother-in-law or something like that?
And I loved my mother-in-law.
I just check it. You know, I just didn't know.
Besides, you could never know anybody who was as bad as the villains you wrote.
They had
to be worse than any living person.
And so not just the creator of the superheroes, but the supervillains as well. Stan Lee, it has been a distinct high mark of my many years in broadcasting to spend an hour with you.
Oh, and bless your heart. I enjoyed it. I hope we can do it again.
I'd love to. Mike, you have made me a superhero in the eyes of my kids that I got to talk to you. They think that was really, really thick. They can't wait to hear the tape. So thank you so much.
Oh, wonderful. And let me close by saying, Excelsior.
If you hadn't, I would have. And thank you and God bless you.
Okay, you
night.
Too. Good night.
Appreciate it. Good night. Stan Lee from Marvel Comics. Thank you, George, for that opportunity. I owe you big time when I see you in March in Los Angeles. Next hour, another great guest and then open lines later on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.